our March web drive, and new friends from Houston have also stepped up. We all hear how the ways people support things that matter to them is changing, from pledge drives and mailouts to the internet. It's revolutionizing giving. A sustaining membership means those who give just a few dollars a month help reduce fund drives and help KPFT all year long. New members also show granting organizations that the community cares about us. Visit kpft.org. Thanks for supporting your community radio station, KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites. Thank you.
Thank you and good night.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, you are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Thank you very much, Pete. Got the cue right this time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I heard that about a week ago, Jay, like, sat up in a darkened hotel room in Europe and said... And he's.
We can only hope.
And his partner wondered, what's wrong?
He was tossing in his sleep. Thanks for that. Thanks for that, Peter. Peter, thanks for that.
All right. Yes, you are listening to Technology Bites. Less professional than usual because we don't have Jay. He will be back next week, right?
He's our professional anchor.
Our professional lightning rod, I think, is more of the... But I think he's back. And as you may have noticed, I'm not stuttering, cutting out, speeding up, slowing down. So I, yes, am live in the studio as well.
Bravo.
Let's see, the important information... the phone number, which will come in handy in a little bit, is 713-526-5738. Our website is www.geekradio.com. There's all kinds of stuff. You can find past episodes of the show straight from the archives, pure unadulterated archive goodness. If
that's what you're into.
That, if that's what you like. If you want it straight, shot straight into the vein. Then you can find that. We do have a Java, if you want to be exploited by Java on your platform and you want to have a reason to enable it. We do have a Java IRC client, or if you can use a regular IRC client, which that's Internet Relay Chat, just in case you've been released from prison recently after a 30-year stay, or came out of a coma, or something like that and don't know what IRC is, or online chat, or... text messagings or iPhones or any of those things. You can listen to this show and eventually you'll be just as confused as we are. Let's see. IRC client, that's Pound Tech Bytes, is the channel, and no, it's not like a hashtag thing. Now we got to see. Now we have to start explaining stuff to the kids. Pound Tech Bytes isn't a hashtag; it's a channel
it's an instruction.
People go on to text to each other in sort of real time.
It's an instruction. Pound Tech Bytes.
That's true too. Let's see.
It's secret code slang to all the jocks out there.
You know those
pound
geeks?
Geeks.
Pound.
I bet Dwight's camera could get on IRC.
Yes.
That probably has an IRC client built into the camera.
It does. Well, you could install it.
From the...
I've got a Samsung Galaxy camera, which is a full-out Android device with a 16-megapixel camera with a 21x optical zoom on it. And it talks to Verizon's LTE network. So you take your pictures and off they go.
So you take 5 pictures and you're capped for the month?
Yep.
Yeah, how does that work?
Well, it also does Wi-Fi. So.
But you can have that massive multi-megapixel animated GIF with 5 frames.
That's right.
With your 1 month's worth of bandwidth.
That's right. What you do is you carry a Sprint hotspot with you, which has unlimited.
There you go.
it's a pretty interesting camera. It has an expert mode with very cool graphics that look like a DSLR lens that pops out across the screen, and you adjust your ISO and you adjust your shutter speed with it. It's a pretty nifty device. It's $500, and of course you have to pay your VIG to Verizon for the service.
And it's not a phone.
And it does not do phone calls unless you do Skype or voice
messaging.
Over IP
calls. So ballpark, what's like the monthly data?
I forget what
wallet.
They have a data only, like a device only plan that
they have like the 1 picture a month plan.
Yeah, right. 2 picture a month plan.
But
that's 200 pictures in 480 by 320.
And it will also take a micro SD card so you can store them on there. But it's a pretty interesting, obviously it's a prosumer thing. If you have a smartphone with like 8 megapixel or the Galaxy S4 is going to be 13 megapixels. Then this kind of goes in between a DSLR and that.
That's going to break Instagram because it's got Instagram on there and it's got a 16 megapixel camera.
Yes.
What's going to happen when people start taking decent pictures?
Instagram will weep like a little girl.
It's not ready. It can't handle it.
Are they? Do they cap? Does Instagram cap or not?
I suspect that probably they resize when
they're going to have to. They'll just block it all in all. So. The thing is, it's kind of hard to upload stuff. I've never gone and taken a high-risk picture and uploaded it to Instagram. To me, it's always been, and I very rarely use it, but it's always been an app thing. But now that it's built into the phone, I would assume you would just upload it from the gallery.
Well, you still have to.
When
you take a picture with Instagram, you still have to crop it. And so I suspect when you do that crop and apply
there'll
filters,
be much more crop.
Yes, yeah, so and it will
lots more pictures of an eye,
and that probably reduces it before it sends it.
Okay,
so you can get that Picasso looking thing when all your pictures get put together out of the one shot that you actually took.
I'm gonna give this the workout for the review. I'm going to the Bayou City Art Festival this weekend, so it'll be good.
It's got a nice feel to it. Is that available yet? Can you actually buy
those?
Yes,
yeah, sure can.
Wow, so they're trying to have this whole Galaxy thing. I guess they're trying to copy Apple before Apple can even do
That's
it.
That's right. Next up is the Samsung Galaxy refrigerator.
Next is the watch, because they said they already
That's
have
what I'm
watch.
Looking forward
watch,
to, yeah.
Then the refrigerator.
Yes. I suspect that's in Pete's news tonight. So.
No, it didn't get that one.
Now it is.
Uh-huh. Well, no, it just was. Let's see. Yeah, so we did give the phone number. We gave the station ID stuff.
Let's give the phone number again just for funsies.
It's 713-526-5738. You can call and get in line. And after a few minutes of hearing us talk about various random subjects and the info shot, then we'll certainly be ready to take your calls about whatever you need help with as far as technology stuff goes. We're not it's not Psychology Bites. If you want to talk esoteric, string theory,
theology,
then you've got to go to the next show. At least if you're listening in Houston, you've got to go to the show with Michio Kaku or whatever after.
We might be able to cover psychology, but
the psychology of buying new gadgets all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Addiction, gadget addiction. Tonight on Technology Bites, we don't have sweeps.
Phantom vibration.
We've got street cred when it comes to totally
that's
non-based.
Real, man. That stuff's real, dude.
Yeah, I know. I've had that before.
Well, what's worse than that, though, I don't know. I have an iPhone, and with the different notification stuff, I know for sure. I mean, I thought it was phantom vibration because then you take it out and it's not doing anything. But then I've done where you take it out and set it on the counter, and it, you know, you can tell it's buzzing. And
that's called real vibration.
How good is a notification if the phone buzzes, you take it out of your pocket, and there is no indication whatsoever of what the heck you were being notified about? You kind of go, I think somebody missed a step there on that whatever app is doing it. And, you know, because it's like, oh, well, every time your phone just randomly does that, you're supposed to check Facebook, I guess. Obsessively check Facebook.
Somewhere, someone wants something from you.
Either that or else somebody else has got the phone that's got where it all lights up and it never buzzes. What? This?
That's one of the things I liked about the...
this never buzzes, so I never get my notifications.
The Nexus One had that little bitty like trackball kind of thing that would turn different colors on the lights depending on what kind of notifications you had waiting, which was nice. You could actually turn off all the audible and all the, you know, all the vibration stuff and just look at it every once in a while. And like, okay, blue light, Facebook, you know, yellow light, SMS, that kind of thing.
But next, we've got you'll buy a watch so that you can get your notifications on your wrist.
Who needs phone anymore?
And then the guys who are just so obsessive. I'm on a lot of sites I love, and I'm always a sucker for the, you know, what's in your gear bag articles. And they just had somebody on one of them where he reviews a lot of stuff, kind of like Dwight. So he really had like three or four different alternate versions of what he might have in his bag. And so I'm waiting for when they've all got their competing Android, iPhone, BlackBerry watches, and that these guys who have to have all the devices and test all of them are walking around with,
be
you
like
know,
Swatch era.
Yeah.
Except on middle-aged men carrying a bag that's got like lots of
fanny packs
in it.
Yeah, if you're at if he shows up at the next geek gathering, James Kendrick usually carries a bag that's full of all kinds of bizarre things.
So just go for the full-on utility belt.
That's like work for him, though.
It is work for him.
Yeah, he's another one of those. So, but when all the watches come out, then I'll be looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, on the street.
Hey, want to buy a watch?
Want to buy a watch? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Want to buy your data?
I had one more, but somebody bought it off me when I checked the time. All right, so I don't know.
So do we have some info shot, Peter?
We do. We do. All we have to do is hit the button.
Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, well, here's a story that's been developing since 1977, much like many of our listeners. This one, the Voyager 1 spacecraft has now officially, as far as now everybody says, it really is officially out of our solar system. There's been back and forth, you know, I've covered the story. The sad part is it's been for like several years where the question's like, okay, well, is it really out of the solar system yet or not? And now they are saying, let's see, well, it was launched, just to give you some details, Voyager 1 was launched on September 5th, 1977. It's been blasting towards the edges of the heliosphere at 10.72 miles per second, faster than any other man-made object to date. On its way to the heliosphere, it passed Jupiter in 1979 and Saturn in 1980. But now the study published in Geophysical Research Letters has made it official. They say 35 years after its launch, Voyager 1 appears to have traveled beyond the influence of the sun and exited the heliosphere, according to the new study appearing online today. The heliosphere is a region of space dominated by the sun and its wind of energetic particles, which is thought to be enclosed bubble-like in the surrounding interstellar medium of gas and dust that pervades the Milky Way galaxy.
About an hour or two ago, JPL came out, NASA, and said, they said, we don't agree. They said right now it's at, more or less, they said, the Voyager team is aware, this is the actual Voyager team that's saying this, they're aware of reports today that NASA's Voyager 1 has left the solar system. The chief scientist, project scientist said, based at the California Institute of Technology, said, it's the consensus of the Voyager science team that Voyager 1 has not yet left the solar system or reached interstellar space.
Oh, okay. So I see here at the end, it says, the Voyager is within a new region called the Magnetic Highway, where energetic particles change dramatically. A change in the direction of that magnetic field will be the last critical indicator of reaching interstellar space, and that change of direction has not yet been observed. So this story keeps going. All right, you know, I'm able to milk this one. I can get, you know, I can already book ahead to like the 2015 info shot around, I don't know,
isn't
September.
Isn't there supposed to be an audible pop when it leaves the solar system?
I heard there's supposed to be a green flash.
Green flash?
Or is that the lifesaver thing? That's I'm not sure which I can
I've heard that the sphere that we're all contained within as a simulation will crack when Voyager hits the edge.
I heard it just reboots and there's a new Neo.
The architect will tell us. And in other NASA news, for all the advanced technologies, modern satellites still rely on low-bandwidth radio transmitters to communicate with ground control. But they could soon be upgraded to beyond broadband speeds when NASA's new laser-based communication system prototype gets off the ground. It's called the Lunar LaserCom Space Terminal, LLST. I'm guessing they couldn't come up with like a LOST, L-O-S-T kind of, you know, set of letters. I guess all the good stuff has been taken. It's the result of the Lunar Laser Communication Demonstration Program, the LLCD. I don't know. I think they should come up with other names, like, you know, LCD Sound System, maybe. Well, that's taken, too. Anyways, it's a joint venture by the Goddard Space Flight Center and MIT Lincoln Labs. It's got three parts. The optical module, which is a 10-centimeter telescope, mounted on a two-axis gimbal that helps aim the laser beam toward one of three ground terminals in New Mexico, California, or Spain. The modem module, which forms the laser, encodes and transmits data, and the controller electronics, which handles telemetry processing and overall system command. It weighs about 30 kilograms, which is around 60 pounds. It's made to survive the rigors of space. It's been put into another NASA project called the Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer, LADEE, L-A-D-E-E. Oh, LADEE! they need to get Jerry Lewis to name their projects, which is an orbiter being launched later this year from the Wallops Flight Facility in Wallops Island, Virginia, to get information on the lunar atmosphere. If it's successful, this will extend space-based laser communication to a staggering 238,900 miles, which is 10 times the distance of any previous system, and transfer rates will be close to 622 megabits per second downstream and 20 megabits per second up.
Whoa.
So that's six times the bandwidth of even the most powerful radio-based comm systems. Most impressive, as the LLST is continuously firing laser beams over that huge distance while speeding along its orbital trajectory, it will still be able to make targeting adjustments with sub-centimeter accuracy. That's pretty good. So that one's kind of cool. Of course, isn't it sort of sad that a probe that's on the moon will have better bandwidth and probably lower latency than somebody who lives in Waller.
All the serious gamers are going to have to move to the moon now.
Google fiber on the moon.
There you go. But it's a little bit sad that way that they hopefully, you know, one of the things I could see with something like this, if it's successful, would be this type of system would be the kind of thing that you could do, you know, you do your backhaul with and have regular Wi-Fi in remote places and then use something like this to get decent bandwidth across long distance, you know, line of sight or better, without the kind of big latency that you get. I'm assuming, you know, the like Hughes satellite stuff, no relation. Yeah, I get a cut every time somebody uses one of them satellite modems. I'm sure that's part of the latency issue is just the you know, the whole radio setup that's having to go do that. But so another good one for NASA, and hopefully soon I'll have it in my laptop. And in bad news, you know, last week, remember there was an update coming from Apple that was going to fix the whole bypass on the lock screen? Yeah, well, now that iOS 6.1.3 is out, iPhone in Canada says that a new lock screen bypass has been discovered. Although, unlike the tricks discovered in the other one, which worked on pretty much any iPhone, the new one appears to affect only the iPhone 4. It also, unusually, involves popping out the SIM card while using voice control to dial an emergency number. Well, that's a lot more complicated, I think, than the earlier ones, at least. The hack was exposed in a YouTube video and has since been tested by iPhone in Canada. Once you pass the lock screen, you can access contacts and photos. An easy way of disabling the hack, however, involves turning voice dial off in the passcode lock menu under settings. So all of you who are worried that some guy is going to borrow your phone, start hacking, moving the SIM card in and out while popping the... At a certain point, it gets to where, at that point, they can just steal your phone and try to hack into it the old-fashioned way. And this is an interesting one. Amazon, this is a nice little feature they've added to the Kindle. They've just made it easier to send long reads, like long articles, to your Kindle. You know, there's stuff like Instapaper, if you used it before, or Pocket, you know, let you download a story to their apps for online access later, or, you know, something that you know you want to read, but you don't have time now, and so you send it to there. Or, like, on the Safari browser, they have reading list, and you can send stuff to your reading list for later. Amazon has come up with something that makes sense for the Kindle market, which is a send to Kindle button that will push content directly to Kindles and devices with the Kindle app. The button's already launched on several sites, Boing Boing, Time, and the Washington Post. So what else do you need? Those three sites, you're covered, right?
Excuse me?
More will likely follow shortly. Oh, I know. I was being sarcastic, as I would hope was obvious. But more will likely follow as Amazon has created a WordPress plugin and a site to help developers place the Send to Kindle button on their sites. Sending web articles to the Kindle is nothing new, but it was extensions to Firefox and Chrome. But this new button changes the game by putting the feature directly in front of potentially millions of Kindle customers with no need to install anything on your browser. That could be bad news for services like Pocket and Instapaper that won't have the exposure of a button at the top of every article on, say, major news sites, but it may make people think about, you know, kind of offline reading. Let's see, and then this is more online. Google has launched a new app called Google Keep, which is apparently their it's their kind of Evernote app to it's their Evernote app to or their Evernote competitor. They launched it today. It's for Android and the web, so not on iOS yet. Designed to help users remember things and jot down ideas. It appears to be Google's answer to Apple's Notes feature, which rolled out a web version last year. Could also serve as a basic mobile to-do list service for people who generally make notes on more complex services like Evernote and Workflowy. According to a post on the Google blog, quote, with Keep, you can quickly jot ideas down when you think of them and even include checklists and photos to keep track of what's important to you. Your notes are safely stored in Google Drive and synced to all your devices and sent to federal officers. Oh, no, it didn't say that. Synced to all your devices so you can always have them at hand. I wonder, there's a good question, is what is the legal, how is access to that? Is that protected or... Can any officer
if they get a warrant? I suspect.
Well, the warrant that pretty much works everywhere, yep. You know, the library or anything. But the like, can a letter? If they just
the
have
National
a letter,
Security
can they go
letter?
Get your get your Google
probably
your
not.
Google Keep list and so see that document where you had the plot for your latest your novel with a terrorist attack that's got all your notes on jihad. Just kidding. As more stuff moves to the cloud, and this is a question, this isn't just a Google question, I'm not picking on Google, it affects Evernote and iCloud and everybody else. Another thing from AT&T, this one's just interesting because of kind of evolution. A lot of people, some people are replacing their, you know, have replaced their landlines with cell phones for a long time. But now AT&T is making an attempt to flip that to where they replace their landline with something that uses the cellular system but is their home phone. They've introduced a prepaid service for wireless home phone. Basically, you plug your wired phones into a cellular hub, and then you only pay, for the times that you want pseudo traditional service, whether it's $20 a month for unlimited U.S. wide calls or $15 for 1,000 minutes of international long distance. It is kind of a way that you could move this around, so you have your number wherever you're at. I'm assuming that it's going to act a lot like a cell phone, where you can essentially plug it in and have you could also get a SIP phone instead and just plug it in and use it that way. But the thing that was interesting to me about the story is that essentially it's kind of turning your wired home phone network into something that can be hooked up to the cellular network and utilize yourself for that. So another new thing that's where the future is kind of creeping up on us. Walmart has a program called Scan and Go. It's iPhone based. It's a self-checkout system. They've expanded it to over 200 stores, up from 70 currently. Now Walmart has like 4,000 stores, so it's not like they've expanded it to a massive number of their stores. But they began pilot testing on the project, which allows users to scan items into an iPhone app as they shop and then easily pay for their items at a checkout station as they leave the store. They started the pilot program last August. Right now, it only works on Apple devices, and Android device should be out soon, according to Walmart. With more than half of its shoppers using smartphones, Walmart is trying to make shopping more convenient for shoppers who embrace mobile technology. More than half the customers who have tried the Scan and Go feature have used it more than once, according to Walmart Senior Vice President Gibu Thomas. The Scan and Go program is currently in place at a number of Walmart stores in Georgia and Arkansas. There's individual stores in Vancouver, Washington, and San Jose, California. They're going to go into a dozen more markets. Sadly, Houston is not listed in them, but Dallas and Austin are. Denver, Colorado, Phoenix, Arizona, Omaha, Nebraska, Dallas and Austin, Texas, Oklahoma City, and Tulsa, Oklahoma. What? You're going to go do this in Oklahoma City and Tulsa before it gets to Houston? Boo, boo. Bozeman, Montana. Oh, Wyoming. They don't say the city, so I wonder, does that just mean, is there only one Walmart in Wyoming? I would think they would have more than one. But Seattle, Washington, and Portland. Of course Portland is going to get it. But, you know, Portland and Austin, they get all the hip stuff. A report notes that while customers are able to record their purchases on their iPhones, they still must pay using traditional methods at self-checkout stations, and the company declined to comment on whether it has plans to offer more integrated mobile payment methods, like paying directly through the app itself. Scan and Go is offered through the standard Walmart iOS app, with users able to access a special mode of the app when they're in the Walmart locations that support Scan and Go. So that's kind of clever. So now if you go to Walmart, you could, you know, hopefully save some. You could cut the length of your visit in half by not having to wait in one of those long lines. Hopefully. I'm assuming it doesn't take forever to. And you avoid the. Have you ever done self-checkout? Well, while you're waiting for the person, usually they're in their like mid to late 70s who can't quite figure out how to scan that one jar of olives that they're keep trying, and then the cashier comes over to help them, and 20 minutes later, then they're starting to read the instructions on how to pay. Anyway, so you can avoid that, because they probably don't have a smartphone. And finally, there wasn't like new hardware stuff that I could stumble across in the time between when I got to Houston and when the show started. This one, another change that kind of the theme of things being done differently than before. T-Mobile is going to change. We've talked about it a little bit before. Is going to change how their system works, so that you're not so that how you buy your phone and how you use it is different. And I'm assuming part of the value to this for this idea is people who've already paid for their phones and unlocked them could potentially save a lot of money compared to other places. Some of the details have allegedly leaked online. If it's true, a document claimed to be an internal memo says that T-Mobile will be creating a new set of price plans that automatically include unlimited talk and text, with the only difference being the amount of data included and the number of lines. The classic plans overview found at TMO News shows the classic plan starting at $60 for 500 megs of data, including tethering for one line, with the cost rising by $20 for 2 gigs and then $10 for each couple gigs after that, up to 12 gigs. They do have apparently an option for unlimited data that will cost $90 on an individual plan. I don't know if that's on top of the other part or if it's by itself, including 500 megs of tethering, but you can buy more tethering. The leaked classic plan details likely to be announced alongside the 4G LTE launch at a T-Mobile event on the 24th of this month, we don't have to wait very long. Will apparently only be offered through T-Mobile resellers like Walmart and Best Buy. T-Mobile stores are said to be offering just the value plans, a similar proposition starting at 500 megs of data, with an option to either be charged $10 per extra couple gigs or pay $20 for unlimited data. Gee, the skeptic in me says, I guess that really depends on what kind of limits are on their unlimited data, like there are on every other unlimited data program that I've ever run across.
Well, right now on their unlimited, they throttle you after a certain point. So,
Given that they've got plans that go up to like 20 gigs, I think or up to 12 gigs, then I would assume that unlimited should mean that you get at least that before they start throttling you instead of the like much lower numbers that I've heard before. But it'll be interesting to see how that works, because if you think about it, if you don't buy a new phone all the time on a lot of cell phone networks, you're still paying rates that are covering the discount they gave you on the phone. They make you stick it to your contract so they know they get back their money that they kind of fronted to get you your phone. But once you're past that, if you keep paying the higher number, they're still making that profit and you didn't get a new phone unless you commit to another couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see how this works for T-Mobile and if they get a lot of people switching over.
You just say, cause I've run into that where, I'm out of contract. Like, okay, well I'm not paying for a phone anymore. So what's my monthly rate? Your monthly rate hasn't changed. Your monthly rate isn't changing.
What?
So basically, I pay the same amount whether I'm paying back a phone or not, then why wouldn't, except, I get locked into a contract. It's a suck situation.
Another 2 years. So at least one company is trying to kind of buck the trend, and it'll be interesting to see how that works.
I know when I bought the first Nexus straight from Google, you had to actually go in there with the contract and say, hey, I want this price, but they actually cut out like $10 or $12 a month in the phone subsidy for bringing your own phone off the plan price. And they actually admitted that. I think maybe I just got a really nice customer service person or something. They didn't know they were supposed to admit that. But yeah, Google kind of promoted that. And sure enough, when I had that, because they weren't paying for my subsidized phone, I didn't have a contract, and it was, 10% cheaper a month. So it doesn't hurt to ask if you're bringing your own device.
Plus they knew that the Google phone, they knew that these were the kind of geeks who would go buy their own phone and bring it in there, which everybody else is kind of... They go, you sure you don't want a new phone? Because I'm sure that's the other thing they say. Well, you could get a new phone every time. But
I bought an iPhone full out because I wanted it unlocked.
That does save you from that little thing like, oh, say some government organization deciding that you can't, that you don't have the right to get your phone unlocked unless you bought it unlocked in the first place. So that's fairly prescient of you, although it looks like they're trying to fix that. And I believe AT&T, at least, under certain conditions, will unlock your phone.
Yeah, I've been trying to get a phone unlocked, an older phone, iPhone unlocked, because they wouldn't unlock iPhones ever. And if you asked them, AT&T would say, Apple doesn't let us. And if you asked Apple, they would say it was the AT&T contract or whatever. It was the contract they signed with AT&T. It was AT&T. Although I'd already read, because, you know, the internet exists all over the world, that there were numerous countries where if you bought an iPhone on a plan, some countries you could immediately turn around and say, I want this unlocked. And some countries they would sell them unlocked, but some countries you could immediately do it, or within 60 days or 90 days or after you paid off, you know, your contract. It varied country to country, but I think the one I was looking at was in Sweden or somewhere. I think it was 60 days. And they said, somebody took pictures, like, this is how it works. Like, you buy the phone, after 60 days you say, I want to unlock it. The phone company, I remember who it was there, the phone company would contact AT&T servers and tell Apple servers and tell Apple to unlock the phone. And the next time you hooked your phone into iTunes, and they took a screenshot, you know, it said, congratulations, your phone has been unlocked or whatever. It was through iTunes. So obviously it was capable years ago for AT&T to do this through iTunes with Apple. But the whatever contract they signed with each other, they blamed each other and neither one would do it. A year ago they changed, and now AT&T will unlock iPhones, and I've been told that it actually is done through iTunes, just like it had always been before. But I have an old iPhone, and it's not, I didn't buy it. A friend bought it, and then they kept upgrading, and I didn't. So at some point, my phone was way older than ones that they didn't care about anymore.
That they had in a drawer.
Yeah, so they gave it to me. And so I used it for several years on AT&T, with an AT&T SIM for like 3 or 4 years. And then I bought the new iPhone 4S when it came out. And so now they've said, we'll unlock old iPhones now. So I asked them to do it. And first of all, I didn't go through. And they told me you can email or call or something. I called, I chatted online with a rep, and he said, oh, no, you can't call anymore. You can't do it through chat anymore. You have to fill out this online form. And I said, yeah, I did that, and it refused it, and it told me that I could chat or call. No, you have to go through. I'm like, so...
You have to go to Cupertino and knock on door at this time.
Am I supposed to just keep submitting it until it doesn't reject it magically one time for some unknown reason?
Well, and the sad thing is, if you took... Say you found a phone... like in somebody else's car or in their pocket, or you stole a phone, it pretty much the thing that it doesn't work anymore, kids, so don't try it. But if you walked into an AT&T place and said, oh, you know, my grandma gave this to me and, you know, I want to start a plan. If you wanted to start a plan, they were perfectly fine with activating that phone, putting a SIM in it, and charging you to use the service. But then when you want to unlock a phone, suddenly it's like, oh,
well, they told me I had to get a copy of the original receipt, purchase receipt. I'm like, well,
because everybody keeps that.
I can talk to my friend, and they were like, well, if they bought it from us, they can go into a store and get a receipt, or if they bought it from Apple, they can go to Apple and get a receipt. So, but if my friend who I bought it from said, if I brought it to him and he put his SIM in it and then requested it to be unlocked, that it would probably automatically unlock it, because he was the one that bought it.
If you go through enough of a pain in the neck, then it'll work. But I guess on that note, I'll say that's the news.
But yeah, it's not on the stolen list. It's not listed as stolen. I used it on their... On their plan, on this phone, you know, on my line for 3 years.
You've already prepaid the subsidy against you having the phone. Yeah. And they still won't.
When did you last call AT&T and ask them to unlock it?
I didn't call him. I was chatting, and I submitted the form online.
Call him.
Yeah, I can, but that guy said that you can't call to do that anymore.
Try it. They just said that, they just have made a big point that never mind the Librarian of Congress, that we will unlock your phone if it's eligible.
So well, that's the thing. It's if it's eligible. And at that point, for it to be eligible, it sounded like it pretty much you had to have a receipt or they had to have in their database that you bought that phone somehow. And even if it had been on your plan for years, you using it, mm-hmm. it didn't matter. They needed proof that you had bought it. That's what it seemed
like.
So
as long as you kept paying them, that doesn't matter. Right? But if you want to try to potentially go and pay somebody else to serve your phone, then they're really concerned that it might be stolen or otherwise acquired illegally.
Well, our number is 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. We've got a couple calls.
We do. So let's see who's first tonight on the show.
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Nancy.
Hey, Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. I have a question.
Cool. Let's hear it.
My computer geek friend came over and recovered my data yet one more time. Electrical work done and everything on the computer shut down. Well, he knows how to come over and do that. But he put the most important things, for instance, my financial spreadsheet. This is the thing. I mean, I have active URL links. I click on these things and pay my bills every month. He decided to save that to the cloud. And I'm like, okay, is that safe?
Which cloud?
Google.
Google Docs?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, do I really want an active spreadsheet of all my finance out there somewhere besides being in my own computer?
Does it have passwords to accounts and account numbers and things like that, or is it just links to all the different accounts and a listing of the accounts?
It has abbreviated passwords as well, yeah.
I don't think I'd have that.
It's not great.
It's probably okay, the odds are, but all it takes is like one odd not in your favor.
Yeah.
That's probably not something you want to have up on someone else's servers.
That's what I'm thinking. It just seemed to make it all that easier. And he said, oh, it'll be okay. I said, I'm going to call Jay Lee.
Well, Jay's not here.
Or Peter.
Jay's not here, but yeah, he would give you the same. I don't think this is one of those where there'd be a contrarian.
And save it on your computer, and I would also print it out. Have it in some other form, just in case the computer crashes. You've got all those links somewhere else.
Put it on a balloon, and then it can be in the real clouds. Oh, wait. No, that's not what you want to do.
I do have a printout of it somewhere, because I need to be able to recreate it if it ever crashes, but I'd feel better saving it to my laptop.
Well, or another option for you would be get a thumb drive. I mean, two or four gig thumb drive is a few bucks now. It's under $10. You can get a couple of them. Put it on there and put it somewhere safe, and then you've kind of always got something to go back to.
Or if you've got the money, they're a little bit more. They're about 10 times as much as normal thumb drives, but for like $70 or $80, you can get something called an Iron Key, and it's an encrypted thumb drive. It looks like it's encased in solid steel. People can try and put passwords in there. It'll deactivate itself. It'll actually self-destruct if people put more than like 8 password attempts in there that are incorrect. If you lose it, you can kill it via the web, and it's just one of those things that it's like a little safe for your data.
That's a good idea, because I don't have much to steal to begin with. Good luck trying, but having credit card accounts and everything out there on some cloud it didn't feel comfortable to me, and that's why I wanted to ask you.
Especially when it's your whole financial life, what there is of it, I would not put all my eggs in that
and one cloud.
Okay, I'll cancel that tomorrow.
So you have good instincts. I think that's wise.
I'd be curious.
Or I'll call him over and tell him to cancel it.
Did he know that he was putting that kind of information up there? Like, does he keep his information like that in the cloud? Would he put his financials out there?
I don't know, but he knew perfectly well what he was putting out there for me, yeah. I mean, that's my monthly spreadsheet for paying all the bills.
Yeah, I would say no. Pull that back.
I appreciate your advice. If I can't figure out how to get it off of there, I should be able to VIDI installed and put it back on my C drive or my hard disk,
yeah,
right?
Just make sure it's deleted from the, make sure you have a copy that you know that it's safe and not going anywhere, and then make sure that the one that's in the cloud is deleted.
Okay. I'll do it, and if I can't figure it out, I'll get him to do it, but I sure appreciate your help.
Oh, glad we could help.
Yeah, I just didn't feel comfortable with that, and I'm glad you confirmed my suspicion.
Glad to help. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's an interesting one, and I think that's sort of the future is, okay, is it that, and that is really smart to ask that question. Mm-hmm. Because there's lots of times where somebody might, just stick it up in there. You know, stick it, just put it in the cloud. Because now it gets easier and easier to share stuff into it. Google keeps adding things. You know, there's Google Keep that was in the news. Apple keeps increasing iCloud connection stuff. I just, I went to open. I don't usually, they have preview is their like PDF reader on Apple. It comes with it. It's bundled. And it automatically opens PDFs. I went to get a PDF I looked at earlier, and did file open, and the first thing it did was open to an iCloud window, suggesting that you could save your PDF files in iCloud, and then you'd always have them on all your computers and so on. So they're even changing the save dialog box on their different apps to encourage you to save stuff there. I'm not saying that you shouldn't save stuff in the cloud. It's just thinking about what you're saving and where is always important. All right, who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Jose.
Hey, Jose, you're on the air.
Hey, how goes it? My question concerns is internet security. I purchased Kaspersky.
Kaspersky.
And for some reason, I keep saying database is out of date like every 3 days.
Well, that's because the deal is when you get the software, that's kind of the tool that goes out and it can look for different kinds of viruses, look for different kinds of infections. What it's downloading every 3 days are these new definitions of, hey, look for this, look for that. And the issue is, you can't just stop with one download because, for the next 3 days, virus writers and malware authors are out there. They're writing new stuff. They're putting new stuff out there. The people at the antivirus teams, the research, the security researchers, they're finding new stuff. So unless you constantly update that, you're only protected up until the last point you updated it. So, you need to do that every few days. It's kind of a nuisance, but unless you're doing that, you're not fully protected.
It's kind of like the flu shot. You know how each year they tell you, you get a new flu shot because the flu virus has changed and evolved since the last one. Well, internet time, 3 days is about as long as you'd want to go between updating your definitions.
So, are you saying that you have to do something for it to update, or it's just letting you know?
Just letting me know to update.
You can probably automate it and then hide the notifications so it just happens in the background and you're not bothered by it if it's an annoyance.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, that's a piece of software that has to update all the time because the virus definitions are always changing because new viruses are always coming out. So most programs don't require you to do anything unless you tell it to. It's just in the background that automatically happens.
And in the current environment, those virus definitions on a lot of good antivirus programs update several times a day. So if you go 3 days, you're really behind. So you definitely want to let it do it when it wants to do it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the information. Thanks a lot.
Glad to help. Yeah, that's a tough one. It's evolving. There's a reason they call it a zero-day exploit. Mm-hmm. it's sort of the worst ones because that means it's now. It just happened, and nobody's had a chance to really...
Right, no patches for it.
Yeah, well, they've done a lot of research, and the antivirus packages are horrible. They have like a 0.1% catch rate at things that haven't been identified yet. So unless a researcher is actually identified and said, hey, we found this in the wild, and it's able to match up that definition, it's not going to catch it.
Jeez.
My guess would be because they're probably erring on the side of safety. so they don't misidentify stuff that's not a virus.
Well, that and also just the way they're looking. They're looking at, like, file signatures and different binary signatures and different behaviors and different open ports, but they're not actually examining how software works and its effects. I mean, if that happened, then they're you'd have automatic that. Testing and you'd have software developers out of work.
They're not doing all the heuristic stuff.
Yeah.
Although, speaking of, you know, that was something I forgot I was going to mention during the info shot is if you're checking yourself out at the store using an iPhone, then clearly at a certain point there would be a need for fewer cashiers to take your, you know, other than somebody to watch that your cart has something match, you know, that it matches what you're purchasing.
But we shouldn't even have to do that because, you know, that commercial should be true.
The one with the IBM one where the guy walks out the door and the security guard runs to give him his receipt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's all RFID tags, and so he's just stuffing stuff in his jacket.
Walmart went in big for that, but they never...
But they never used it, I don't think, for checking out. They only used it
for
inventory
management. Yeah.
Inventory security, yeah. So, I don't know. Well, at some point, I guess with the like NFC kind of thing with the phone, which iPhone does not have yet... then it would be something where you would like fill your phone up with your checkout stuff and then go tap a thing and you're done. And maybe it'd email you the receipt. That's something I'd like. There's more places now that email you a receipt when you...
Petrol station.
Yeah, Square's gotten really big into that where you can do the tip, you can do the signature. Everything's just, you know, automated, which is kind of nice.
Cool.
In one way. And the other way, I kind of miss just cash, you know.
I also miss kind of the ability to fool myself that I still have more money than I
have. I don't want to know that I spent $80 on coffee last month, you know?
All right, who's next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Gary.
Hey, Gary, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm getting an internal pop-up on my computer. I apologize because I tried to print it out so that I could read you the technical jargon. But basically, my mouse is screwing up. I have an 8-year-old Dell, and it came with the mouse, and so every now and then the little LED, the red LED goes out. And now I'm getting a pop-up saying that and I don't know the jargon, but the system does not recognize external USB device. So my question is my mouse screwing up or is my computer screwing up?
I would guess if it's an 8-year-old mouse, the mouse is probably dead.
You think so? Because the computer's old. The mouse came with the computer, and you know all the little LEDs that the little green lights across the front of your tower go back and forth. Well, they're all dead too. So I don't know.
You just want. I think that if the USB had died on the machine, that you would not be getting an error message saying, "Hey, the HID device, you know, the mouse pointer." Isn't working because you wouldn't even be able to see that there was anything connected.
It's working and then it's not working and now it's working fine and every now and then I get this pop up. So
is the keyboard USB or is it PS2?
I have no idea. It came with the computer. But the question is, if I go buy a new mouse, do I have to down, like when I bought my new brother's printer, I had to put it into the system so that the system would recognize the printer. If I bought a new mouse and it was a different brand, would I have to download that data and set it all up to recognize the new mouse?
If it's USB, I'm guessing you're running XP if it's an 8-year-old computer, Windows XP.
Exactly.
It should just have a generic mouse pointer driver in there that it should load up automatically. Now it may try to connect to the web and download something more specific.
If you're not trying to go buy like, you know, a Logitech MX, you know, $80 mouse or something.
Or a novelty $3 one.
Yeah, if you're just gonna go buy just a normal 2-button scroll wheel laser mouse. You should be able just to unplug the old one, plug in the new one, and you shouldn't need anything different.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, the second question, well, that was my first question. Can you buy a Dell mouse at, like, a Radio Shack or somewhere?
It doesn't have to be Dell.
Buy a cheap Microsoft mouse for $9 or $10.
And it'll work just as good.
Yeah. Should work, yeah.
All right, now, what was the name of the guy that gave the news when you first started?
Peter.
Huh?
Peter.
All right, well, I want to tell Peter that I can't wait till he's mid like mid or late 70s at the supermarket dealing with new technology either.
Oh, no, I'm going to enjoy it. Those kids are going to be so PO'd.
How come my smartphone won't open this door?
They'll revert to writing checks.
And they'll be like, who uses smartphones anymore? You know, they're all going to be wearing Google Glass.
Well, you're making fun of the poor old fart trying to figure out the auto scan, but, you know, technology's moving so fast. You're going to be 70 someday too, son, and you're going to have to deal with it.
No, I'm going to make younger people do stuff for me. That's the thing is when you go, if you don't know how to use it, go to the line where
you don't know how to use the technology, use the kids.
Thank you, guys.
Right, have a good night.
Good night.
Yes, or bring some youngster. It's like, what, on Twitter I saw Simon Pegg, the guy Shaun of the Dead, and Hot Fuzz and all those. On Twitter he said, just got a Wii U. And then the next tweet was something about, you know, couldn't figure it out, so I got the 10-year-old next door to hook it up. Which, that kid, you know, he didn't have to read the instructions or any of that. It was just tick, 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 done, works. And that's why we have children. At Christmas time, I don't worry if we get video game systems at home that I'm going to have to figure it out. Because my son, I consulted with him a few years ago on kind of how it's all hooked up. Because we have, you know, an AV receiver and all that kind of fun stuff. And he gets it. And so now I just sit back and have coffee and he...
And you've forgotten how to do it.
He enjoys hooking all of it up and making it work. I still keep track. I could do it if I needed to.
It seems like we're probably going to go through like a simpler to hook up phase at some point where you actually won't have, you know, 70 cables. I mean, there seems to be a desire for minimization.
Well, one wire or wireless?
Wireless. Yeah. You know, right now, if you buy an iMac, and you take it out of the box, and it has either the Apple Magic Mouse and the wireless keyboard, and you just turn it on, make sure the mouse is on, make sure the keyboard is on, they all just talk to each other, and that's it. And that's kind of the way it should be, and eventually everything will be like that.
Yeah, yeah. The sad part is, you know, I don't have the latest iMac. I mean, I've got a 24-inch, so they stopped making those several years ago now. But... you know, the sad thing is I've got the wireless keyboard and I've got the wireless trackpad, but then it gets really irritating because you look and there's all those wires that you have to have still, the power cord. I like Ethernet to my, you know, I like to have Ethernet to the cable box from mine because it never slows down. There's never interference or any of that kind of stuff. And so then you get all those wires. And I actually took a little time with my latest desk to, you know, route the wires and at least sort of put them where you can't really try to make it look like there's no wires, which I'm sure Steve Jobs somewhere chuckled when I took
the
effort to do it.
He was buried wirelessly, too.
But, all right, let's see.
Do we have time?
We've got about a minute to kill or so, so we've got to go off to the station break. I'm still waiting for the Nexus 4 wireless charger. Oh, whoa, someone's got a hands-on review. Is it out?
It's out, yeah.
Whoa, I got busy at work. Can you actually buy these now?
I don't know.
Huh.
The problem is, to make it work, you have to have the Nexus 4 going 88 miles an hour, and the hook has to hit the connector right when the lightning strikes. So,
Someone's gone all 8-bit on our ass.
This is my outro music. I'm testing.
Sounds a lot like somebody in the next room is having an 8-bit party or something, or playing Nintendo.
It's an 8-bit party.
All right. Well, we are coming up on the end of the hour. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And we'll be back after these.
Wait!
You burned Groovehouse again.
You burned Groovehouse.
Groovehouse.
Women Organized to Resist and Defend is a new grassroots feminist organization dedicated to building the struggle for women's rights and equality for all. The last few years have seen a shocking number of attacks on the rights of women through anti-abortion legislation, slashing of social services, and new heights of misogyny. Now more than ever, a new fighting women's movement is needed. For information, you can visit defendwomensrights.org. Throughout history, the gains that women have made have been won through militant struggle. WORD wants to revive this kind of struggle by uniting all women to defend our rights. Fighting racism, anti-LGBT bigotry, and the oppression of the poor are part and parcel of this struggle. No woman can be free while others are oppressed. You can learn more about WORD at defendwomensrights.org.
This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
We had no quarrel with anyone. We only want to stop riding the buses until we are treated as any other passenger.
Tune in on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. for the best of our past, present, and future from the vault. From the Vault is a weekly hour from the Pacifica Radio Archives, a national treasure of interviews, performances, and important moments. In this weekly documentary series, From the Vault presents archival audio to bring history to life.
It sounds like Harvey Milk is trying to send a message out to other gay or non-gay people who want to run for public office.
Get involved. Build your base. Build your support. You can't just get out there and say, hey, I'm a nice guy and I'm going to vote right on all the issues.
From the Vault airs Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can hear a repeat overnight Saturday following the program after hours. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
And we're back. Now, Barrett, you know, he's just phoning it in these last couple of weeks. Jay's out, and he's just not feeling it, I guess. Just do whatever he wants to do.
When Jay comes back, he'll whip him back in the shoes.
I'm having to work. I came from work, and I'm doing coding on billing systems, and it's
on premium. Paper?
No. I'm taking paper-based things. These are actual checks and actual financial documents that I'm having to code around because it's got to be done tonight. It's premium remittance reporting systems. Sexy side of IT.
this is not tech related, but I have to say it because it pains me. But a Houston institution is closing. Marfrelis is shutting down.
Yeah, I saw that mentioned.
And so late.
I never went there.
You never went to
Marfrelis? I never went there. It kind of scared me.
Marfrelis is a little scary, but it's the Love Lounge.
Yeah.
I was cool with going there before, but now I don't want to go.
My understanding from other people who went there was that, you know, it was two stories and there were a lot of separated areas and it was fairly dark throughout the place.
Yes.
And so you could bump into people doing pretty bad things while their husbands or wives weren't around.
It's kind of two bars in
fantasy.
One. There was there's kind of the makeout bar part of it, and then downstairs in the main part of the bar, it's very, you know, quiet. It's comfortable. They play classical music. They had a well-stocked bar with, you know, get almost anything you wanted. They had good wines, good
Nothing
beers.
Going on here, officer.
Yeah. Upstairs, that's another matter. It's been around for 40 years. When I was working in Beaumont, my first newspaper job at the Enterprise, I used to drive into Houston to meet my girlfriend there.
Did you take the trolley?
I rode my mule.
When the 1904 hurricane hit, did it make you late for
your
day?
So it's a great place. And in the story we have on cron.com right now, it says that they're looking for a place to move to. They may move if they can, but it's the bar with no sun over the door is going away, and it's a sad day in Houston.
Aren't they? It seems like I went there and didn't know it.
I always thought of it as Marfrelis.
Well, one of the things, they don't have this anymore, but the original owner used to have this chalkboard on the, as you walked in, that had his 100 favorite movies of the previous year, he would do it on like New Year's Day. He'd write them down, and then he would like have pamphlets, and so it was something to talk about when you were in there. And his list of movies were things like I had never heard of before, but when you went and looked at them, they were always interesting. You know, I'd like make notes and
early social media, the blackboard by the door. Was the parking lot really hard to get in and out of? Like it was fairly slow.
It's a weird wedgy kind of thing.
Yeah, easy to park a bunch of horses.
There were only like two ways, one way in on one side and one out on the other or something.
Was under the staircase, under the white staircase.
Had like low spoilers and all this, and one of the driveways, if it's the place I'm thinking, we were out one night and went there, and then when we left, we couldn't leave through one of the ways out because the ground effects on his car couldn't clear the exit.
But when you rode in on your bicycle with the big wheel in front, it was easy to get on and off.
Hold my top hat, please.
my fondest image in there was they had this waitress back when I was coming in from Vermont.
Is this on-air appropriate?
No, yes, this is on-air appropriate.
File report.
Slightly. She was probably about 20 feet tall, long black hair, dominatrix boots, and she, every time I was there, like three times I was there, I saw her, she was always eating cereal with milk out of a beer glass. That's what she did. It was really weird. It was
So we had early David social Lynch media movie. And an early version of South by Southwest.
Exactly. All right. Enough fond memories.
Let's make some new ones.
Yeah. But not that kind. Not yet.
If you're later. Calling in eating cereal out of a beer glass, just let us know. We'll appreciate it. So, who's our first caller for this hour?
All right, up first on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with David.
Hey, David. Hello. Hey, David, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a kind of a low-tech question. I have a cheapy Kodak digital camera, accidentally deleted all the pictures off of it, and would like to know how I can recover it. I took it to a camera store. They said they couldn't do it. Took it to another one. They said they could do it for, like, $1,000, but I've heard that there are some online software that you can download and try and do it yourself.
Does the camera have like a memory card that the pictures were stored on, or are they stored inside the camera itself and you only get at them with a cable?
I believe it does both.
Do you know where your pictures were? Were they on removable?
I think they
media?
were in both places.
Because I know Jay has talked about that you can get, you know, like using some, there's some disk, some recovery software that you could use with that card and try recovering that.
Yeah,
I think you'd have a better chance with the card. Although, if you mount the camera to a computer that doesn't have the software for it, it might recognize the internal just as a attached USB drive, and you might be able to use the same software to get to that as well. Although if it's formatted oddly because Kodak did something weird, then you're going to end up with... But if you could pull those files off and then put it into the Kodak software, maybe it would work. I don't know.
What kind of software?
I can't remember.
There are some different packages. The deal is if it uses FAT16 or FAT32 or something like that, when it actually goes in and says, hey, I'm deleting this file, it doesn't totally wipe out the file. It just wipes out this part of an allocation table that says, hey, this file's stored here.
Yeah, it's kind
of
like
a software that can go in and pick up everything else and kind of figure out the name. So
it's kind of like a file cabinet, or it's kind of like a library with the card index.
Yeah.
And the card index points to the books. And when you delete one of those, what it does is it just throws out that index card with the location. It doesn't actually go get rid of the book.
Well, can you recommend a software that I might seek to try both methods?
I can't remember the one that Jay mentioned several times. I know it's on his blog and
one I see listed on forums, and I this is not an endorsement. I haven't used it, but there's one that's called Pandora Recovery.
Pandora.
There's one called Photo Retrieval that somebody says.
I can't remember the one Jay. I know Jay's used one a couple times, and he's had a couple other people come to him, and he's done it, and he's told them to do it, and I think most of them have been able to recover at least some of their stuff with
it. Was it like OnTrack?
No, there's a... No, it was, I think it was made specifically, by SanDisk.
It was specifically for USB thumb drives.
Yeah. So you want to have a card reader. If your computer doesn't have a slot to put the card in, you want to get a card reader and get...
For that type of card, which could be an SD card or a...
And then look at... Then pick the software that you want to try on recovering your photos from the card.
Okay.
It's possible they're also just gone, too. So.
Yeah, it's possible. But that's helpful. I'll try that, and I won't have to sleep in the doghouse anymore. I have another question about... I heard somebody mention something about a wireless cable within the house. I got a big old house with... a lot of brick walls, and would like to put cable in a place where I don't want to drill through the brick walls. Is there a company or a technology that does like broadcast cable within a big old house?
I don't think typical
wireless
cable.
Wireless in should be able to go through brick walls. Okay,
wireless. He's talking about cable TV, though, right?
Right.
Yeah, the problem is the TV signal. Now, some things like
AT&T
U-verse uses Ethernet, which would mean that you could use something like Powerline.
They also use wireless.
They advertise wireless TV that you can move from room to room.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard of that. Outside. I just don't like U-verse.
It sounds like it's probably your only option right now.
Okay.
Unless you're using some kind of sling box device, guys.
That would be a possibility. You could get the problem is that there's a lot of cost to. So, are you using? Is it Comcast that you're on?
Yes, because we like the Rockets and the Astros.
There might be devices that can convert coax signal to Ethernet.
There's an X10 device. There's some stuff out there that does
and then do wireless and then convert it back.
There's some kind of, I don't know if they'd be cheap though. Stuff, yeah. You can get like a sling box is around $150 and it will broadcast on Wi-Fi. The sad thing is that competitors to coax cable type systems are being a lot more imaginative than the cable providers. And so like the satellite dishes and stuff, they have, if you've got a Wi-Fi network and you've got the, whether it's Dish Network or DirecTV, I think, it shares a lot of the stuff is available on Wi-Fi so that you can use an app on a computer and watch most of the programming that's live on the satellite and stuff like that. But otherwise, to do it for cable, then usually it means you have to do something like some of them offer if they have the services, if it's the channels you want, where they're offering it over their app. I know that like for premium channels like HBO and stuff, they'll do where you can, use a computer and you're really getting the show over the internet. But if you didn't have your cable subscription, you wouldn't be allowed.
I see. Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much.
Look at the sling box and see if that...
Sling box. I think that sounds like a good one. All right.
If that gives you the right results. All right. Well, one quick thing before we take another call is, I was exaggerating for effect when I said that, old person trying to figure out the... Actually, I'm irritated whether they are young or old if they can't use the the scanner thing. Actually, you know what's even worse? What I hate is when I'm using the thing and you've got stuff that's light. Like I was at a hardware store and I bought a bag of screws. And so you run the thing through and it beeps. So now it's on the screen. You've done that. And you throw it in the bag and it says,
please place the item on the sensor.
In the bag. Put the item in the bag. And it gets louder and it's like accusing you of stealing.
Security.
And,
security.
And you call the helpful person who, what's this person's job? To sit and watch people fumble around with these machines, and they come over and are totally not helpful or sympathetic.
Did you put the item in the bag?
they start patting you down, and
Although humorously, most of the time when I see that happen, the person's like doesn't know what's going on, no matter what their age. They don't know what's going on. Maybe they didn't even put the item in the bag. Or they don't know how to scan something or whatever, or they scanned it twice somehow, and they're looking over at the person, and the person walks over and looks at them, and then looks at the machine, and then enters a code and walks off. Like, they don't say a word.
Yeah. No help, no nothing. You know, although the quickest way, here's a tip for you, if you're at the machine and it's just totally not cooperating, just take everything in your cart, just start throwing it in the bags, and I guarantee you they'll come over and help you real quick. they'll sort it all out. But anyways, no, I was not trying to imply that all people who are older, there are plenty of them who can teach any of us on this show about technology and who've been there from the beginning and who know this stuff. But so it's just tough when somebody tries to use technology that they're not familiar with and you're stuck behind them in line.
So our phone number is 713-526-5738. We have lots of open lines and we got a couple calls too.
Awesome. So who's next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Tony.
Hey, Tony, you're on the air.
Okay, great. I resemble that remark you made earlier. Glad to hear that you would be upset at kids that don't know how to use it.
Particularly babies. We hate babies that don't know how to use technology.
They never put it in the bag after they
stand it on their tippy toes and their little carts and everything trying to reach us.
Yellow plastic carts.
So, first question I have is, I have an 80 gigabyte hard drive that crashed out of a G4 transition Mac that runs OS 9 and 10. And I had a Apple tech look at it, and he couldn't get anything off of it at first, and he tried a few times. And then I asked him for it back so I could someday send it off and have the platters put into another mechanism and see if we could recover some data that way. But that's kind of expensive. And so he tried it one more time. He got a folder. It was personal stuff and old, useless stuff. And I kind of wanted to get some stuff off of there. And I was wondering, if I got another drive, can I take this thing apart, take those platters, put them in another thing, and do it myself, and potentially come up with...
Usually that kind of stuff's done in a clean room.
Yeah.
There have been people that have done that.
People have done it.
There was a big movement where it was really cool to, like, mod your hard drive to where you would replace, like, the metal part with, like,
acrylic or plexiglass
on
top.
But a speck of dust or anything there on the platters is going to mess it up. That's stuff that's usually done, you know, in a clean room by people in bunny suits.
Yeah, so I'll wash my hands.
Yeah, you know.
Right. So it might work.
You're good to go.
But I will tell you that what you might want to try, depending on the age of the drive, if you can find the same company and size hard drive, unless you hear physical, like, bad clicking sounds, in which case the platters may be actually physically damaged anyway, you can take the circuit board that's on the bottom off of the bad one and put the circuit board from the good one that you just bought on that one. And in some cases, it's the circuit board that's a problem, not physical platters and heads. And you can actually do that, and the drive will work. Now, sometimes that doesn't work, in which case, if you really wanted to do it yourself, take the good circuit, put it back on the new drive, and then pull the tops off of both those hard drives and put the platters in the new drive. But there's no guarantee that would necessarily work.
Right.
First of all, because that work should be done in a clean room, and if dirt gets in there, it's definitely very bad for them. The other thing is as hard drives have gotten newer, the technology has changed so that the heads write much more specific, smaller track sizes. And so some newer drives, the heads are actually aligned by information on the circuit board. And so if you change the platters out, then the heads on the new one won't be aligned with where the heads were on the original hard drive.
Right. And I don't see a date, I don't think, on the vinyl sheet that has all the little bar codes and says what size it is and everything. So I'm going to buy two replacement drives to put into the machine and get it back up and run and use one regularly, and the other one will be a dedicated backup. And because it's got a port big enough for two drives. The clean room concept of that is based on, I'm only going to do it once, and as long as nobody blows smoke directly into it, the chances are it's not going to pick up a piece of dirt in a couple of seconds, one single time of being opened up. If you were going to open it every day, yeah, or smoke around it, those particles are large enough to accumulate over a period of time. So anyway, the real question I have is the Hollywood movie story that you're writing and putting onto cloud so that somebody sees it and might think, well, you were going to go pour Mountain Dew on the lawn at the whatever house that place is called, where the big guy lives. Anyway, I had a system check on my PC, and I don't know much about PCs. I downloaded a QuickBooks file from my bank and was trying to put it into QuickBooks, and it wouldn't work, and it said I needed some Microsoft file. So I went there, and it said, okay, click here and download this thing, and then you can do it. So I clicked there, and a scan started, and 1,624 errors showed up. System errors, COM, ActiveX, user, personal profile, and third-party affecting programs, those four categories. And so after I registered, because it said then you had to register, it wanted money. Well, I'm not going to pay money for it. I've already got...
That's a scam.
Well, it came directly off of Microsoft.com website.
Wow. There could be a lot going on.
Yeah, I don't even know if Microsoft has... offer services where they scan and then charge money to repair, or even like allow people to advertise on their site.
We've got the Fix It Now, but that's a free service.
Right, Fix It Now is free. Do you know?
That's what I was expecting.
But it was like a well. So you tried to do the QuickBooks thing, and it said you needed something from Microsoft. How did you get to Microsoft? Did you do like a Google search, or did they have a link in what you got from the QuickBooks thing, or?
It's already been 4 or 5 days, and every night when I power down my brain, it's like RAM.
Right. That's one of those ways where the tough part is then there may be some step in between when you got the QuickBooks thing from the bank and how you got to Microsoft where you maybe weren't where you thought you
now,
were.
Now, Microsoft does have some for-pay support services. I don't think... that any of them involve reaching out to your computer unless you actually are calling them, dealing with them on the phone, they ask your permission to connect, and you've made the call. Is that what happened?
No. I'm more than likely...
I suspect you probably thought you went to Microsoft's website, and you
didn't.
Yeah,
I might have Googled it. I might not have, but I thought I went to... MS.com or whatever it is.
MS.com is not it.
Whatever their site is called. I'll go back and track it down, though. So in the meantime, I was unable to import the bank file into my QuickBooks Pro. And I'm still wanting to try to figure out how to do that. And I've got Norton Utilities, and it's installed on the computer already. And if I needed to do some sort of a scan and fix, shouldn't I just use what I've already got?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you kept it up to date in terms of, you know, making sure
every now and then that computer says, well, I'm going to do this thing without your permission, and it'll update up to 14 different files. And today I left 7 hours ago and came back, and it was still doing, it said it was going to do one of them today, and 7 hours later it's still doing that one. So I just turned it off because as far as I'm concerned, anything that's that intense is erroneous. It doesn't have anything to do with what I want. It may be what I need. I doubt it. But
well, it's also possible that if what you did install was a Trojan, then your normal system processes that would go get updates are being blocked by the Trojan, so that it can no longer actually make those connections to download the up definitions that would find this and clean it out.
That's usually step one. That's kind of it cutting the phone lines for help to your
You may be in a position where you need to take that machine or let a professional technician look at it hands-on.
Yeah, I just, a couple of weeks ago, got a guy that is going to start doing my stuff, and I'll take it over to him and get him to look at it.
Yeah, because if somebody can get Virus Scanner and then, like, SpyBot and Malwarebytes and some of that, like, on a thumb drive or on a CD-ROM or some bootable media, that would be the best way to try to do that.
Yeah, and stuff associated with QuickBooks, that's
that's got to be a high-value target to somebody who's wanting to get to steal your data or get access to your finances, just generically, not yours specifically.
Yeah, so. Right. It would make sense if it was some big company or even a medium-sized company where they were doing 3-4 employees or 10 or 20 employees, but I'm a one-man organization and I can barely pay my bills. So they're not just...
Well, so there's at least that. That's like our other caller who basically you can prevent a lot of theft if you don't have anything to steal.
I'm saying, but you know they after that didn't work and you if your bank accounts didn't have much in it, then they could always say, well, let's see if he has good credit.
There you go.
No problem there either.
All right, so
we hacked into the guy's account. We felt bad for him. We funneled some money in and we got out of there.
We actually deposited $7 in his account before we left.
Any day, and they'll give me $1,000 if I'll let him off the hook.
All right. Well, it sounds like you've got some challenges, so good luck with that.
Okay. Well, thank you a lot.
Bye. All right, well, we got plenty of open phone lines.
We have another half hour or so, yeah.
Time. So, 713-526-5738 is the number to join in the festivities.
We're damn festive.
I just ordered a bumper for my phone, finally. I've been waiting for that for like 3 or 4 months. I mean, Pete's seen it. This thing, it's so slick on the glass that if it's for the Nexus 4, if it's at the slightest incline, it's like it slides off. Yeah.
You bought a bumper?
See your phone. I don't think I've ever like touched
it. It's a ski jump.
You bought a bumper?
A bumper for it.
Like around the sides?
Yeah, just around. It's in stock again.
Huh.
Versus the whole
thing.
To
make it a little bit more.
Just so it'll stay put where I set it down.
What if you just took like a little piece of rubberized tape or something and just put it on there just in one point?
It'd come off my pocket probably. I mean, anything that's going to give it traction is going to not make it out of my pocket. Anything that's going to stay on the phone isn't going to stop it from
sliding. Do you still like that phone?
Yeah, I do.
You don't want one of these?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's shiny.
I like gardens, but I don't like walls.
Ooh. Nice.
Geek fight. Geek fight.
I would throw my phone down, but it doesn't have the bumpers yet.
Yeah, just make sure you were paying close attention that you didn't just order a bump it.
Uh-oh.
You don't have the hair for that.
Or a bumpy.
Well, now we've got an Android versus iOS kind of showdown in here. So.
Dun, dun, dun.
Symbian.
what is the name of the operating system that Samsung's coming out with later? Tenzin?
Oh,
something
yeah.
Like
there's
that.
Also got Firefox OSs now out there.
Yeah, Firefox OS.
No,
still
it's an on-star. Oh, the Ubuntu has a mobile OS, don't they?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So there are some players. Most of those are like lower, right. Lower tier handhelds. But you know, there's some competition. It's not just Android and iPhone anymore.
Isn't it like SOI, Samsung's thing? SOI. To copy Apple closely.
Well, that was SO, a different letter.
IOSS.
There has been in the tech press, there has been quite a bit of complaining about the content in the launch presentation for the Galaxy S4. There were a lot of...
Wasn't it like 50s Housewives?
Yes, kind of yes. It was very stereotypical women, lots of... They were accused of sexism. But just in general, it was horribly, awfully bad. It was like a bad high school Broadway, attempted a Broadway.
As long as they didn't get into any ageism. Well, I can't tolerate that.
If only we had commercials on the show, we could have run that after the info shot.
Oh,
and then
man,
everybody
would
be complaining.
Bad. It was bad. You just got to hope that the device is better than that.
That their ad agency isn't, that their operating system group is better than their ad agency.
I heard it's still plasticky on the back.
It is still plasticky all over. Yep. So, all right. So we have calls.
All right. So who's next?
All right. Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Ed.
Hey, Ed. What can we do for you tonight?
Hi. How are you?
Really good.
I've got a 15-year-old HP LaserJet 4000 printer. That actually works fine on my Windows 7 machine. Of course, I have to use an adapter for it because it doesn't have a USB port. And I wanted to use it with my MacBook, and I'm at the HP driver and software page, and under the operating systems to select, It looks like it stops at Mac OS 10.6, and I've got Mountain Lion 10.8. So this kind of implies to me that it ain't going to work, and I wondered if you guys had any workarounds that that might allow
yes,
it to work, allow
can,
this older printer to work with a MacBook.
I believe, I mean, I've got a really old printer that actually I bought in, like, 91 or 93 mm-hmm. for college, and it still works. It's a HP LaserJet 4L.
Uh-huh.
And I just use, there are two, you can either use the HP JetDirect driver, or you can just use straight up, I think it's like PCL5, or it's a standard printer driver that works. HP embraces the standards. So, yeah, is it just like PCL5/6 is what I would try to use, or PCL5.
Okay. All right. I will give that a whirl.
Yeah, you should Thanks. Be in good shape. If that doesn't work, just play around a little bit, or just Google the model you have and put in generic printer driver, and it'll tell you which one to use probably.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
All right.
Good luck.
Bye.
Yeah, those HPs won't die.
That's true. That's true. I've dealt with a few on it. Yeah, when you have to go buy a, USB to parallel port adapter, and it works, that's the other part. I mean, think about all the printers that went obsolete, like the...
Were the CentOS, the or the...
Yeah,
Centronics adapter.
Right.
Jeez. All right. Well, we do have a few phone lines open if you want to call in at 713-526-5738 while we're talking to...
Up next, we're going to be speaking to Mark.
Hey, Mark, you're on the air.
Hey, hi. Listen, I did a bad thing. I accidentally broke my girlfriend's air card to her. She has a 3G plan with Verizon, and I broke that, and it doesn't work anymore. And
was it broken during a good time or broken during a bad time? Because that makes a big difference.
I ran over it with the car.
Ooh, accidentally or on purpose?
Yeah, and it was the old plan was yet unlimited data usage, and so we didn't want to go to the new 4G, which would cost quite a bit more. Even though it's a little bit faster, but I don't believe those claims. So anyway, I went to a Verizon contractor, and the guy there had an old Wi-Fi card that he had, a little battery-powered device that's a little bit bigger than a credit card, and he said we could take it and use that as the modem instead, and went to the store. He couldn't do it. He wasn't authorized, and had that device added to the account, and it connects. It says we have a connection, we have the internet, but the DNS server error, and it doesn't recognize the server.
You said Wi-Fi card, but is this like a GPRS card?
Or like an external box that is supposed to connect to Verizon, and you connect it with Wi-Fi? Is that...
Yeah, right. It connects to Verizon internet and then connects wirelessly to the computer via Wi-Fi.
And it is activated?
Yes, it is activated. We went to the store, and they said it was, you know, they put it on their plan.
Did they get it working at the store?
They said they did.
I'd take it back to the store.
Okay.
You know, just go back in there with your stuff, particularly if it was recent, and say, hey, this was may have been working, but it's not working now. Can you help me? And they'll probably give it a shot. They may be able to look inside it and see if there are any settings that aren't correct. Are you able to get a connection to the Wi-Fi? Do you get a connection to it? But it, you can't get a connection out?
Yes, get a connection to the Wi-Fi, but the Wi-Fi doesn't seem to connect to the internet. You know, when they give you the little diagram that here there's a connection, but here there's a red X.
Right. So in the when you connect to it, a lot of times you're able to put in an address, and it's usually an IP address that will give you basically a web-based settings page. Have you figured out how to do that? Have you done that?
No, I didn't. I didn't change any IP settings or anything. It was a password.
Often it does it automatically.
But one time use.
But you have to put in the email. You have to put in the address.
Sometimes it does it or the thing will come up though automatically. Sometimes if you plug in the USB and connect it to the device, if you plug in a USB cable to your laptop and then you plug
it in. Yeah, can
it
connect via a USB cable by chance?
Well, that's what I tried to do the very first time. I didn't want to run down the battery, so I used the USB cable the first time, and it didn't work. Right. And so then I did it wirelessly after that, and it still didn't work.
So what I would do is get the model number for it. Do a Google search for the model number for that and see if you can find a manual for it. In the manual, it will tell you how to access the web page that lets you see the settings. And may show you, you know, what you need to do to be correct. But if you're not up for doing that, if you don't feel that you've got the skills to do that, I'd take it back to the store and say, hey, I'm not getting any DNS on this.
Okay. The only problem is it's not my account, and so they don't really want to talk to me. They say, no, you're not the user.
Who's the user?
His girlfriend.
My girlfriend's father. It's his account.
You didn't run anyone else over, did you?
No.
Okay, the modem wasn't in her father's pocket when he ran over with the car.
He's a good guy. I mean, it's the only thing that he's got on the Verizon account. They couldn't look it up by his Social Security or his telephone number. He doesn't have anything else with Verizon. They had a heck of a time finding him. He had to go find an old bill somewhere.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you're gonna, you know, the only other thing then you're gonna be able to do is try to find the manual and see if you can get into the settings. But again, go back and, you know, throw yourself on the mercy of the court and see if they can help you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Bye.
Yeah. If he's not messing with any account information.
Yeah.
Then they should just be able to
fix the device.
It.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and see whether it's working, and they know, and it's got the account should be in it already, right. Well, I know I've got a T-Mobile access point that I've used for, like, when I travel and stuff. And to get that going, to start with, you end up hooking it up USB-wise and going through, and it launches. It gives you this, what it looks like an app, but really it just launches a browser that calls a particular address that then it goes through to, like, T-Mobile, but you're controlling your settings and you can set a password and that kind of stuff. So it may be that he's only getting that partial connection that's supposed to only take him to Verizon's setting page, but he's not really going to the page, and so it doesn't work. All right, well, who's next? Who All can right. we maybe help and just wish good luck at the end next?
Yeah, really. Tell him to go read the manual.
All right, well, let's see if maybe if we can help Anne.
Hey, Anne, you're on the air.
Hi. I was trying to check. Someone was mailing me by way of email to my, you know, PC, some forms I was supposed to fill out, and they were, you know, 8.5 by 11, they said. But when I got them, my printer printed them only half a page across, so instead of being 8.5, I guess it was like 4.25, but it cut off the edges of each side of the form, and I looked at, you know, the settings for the printer, and it didn't say to do several to one page or anything. And I wondered what could be wrong. I called again, and they said, yeah, they're full size, and they didn't know why they were coming, you know, as email, that when I printed it, you know, it was an attachment, why they weren't the full size, and I didn't know. What else can I look at?
Is the document, is it a PDF? Is that what the file type is?
Yeah.
I don't usually end up using PDF Reader, and you're on a PC, so you're using like Adobe PDF Reader?
Well, using Adobe 10, I think it says.
Isn't there a fit to page checkbox?
There also may be like a page set. I'm thinking between fit to page and page setup that your settings in PDF Reader are set to a different size than the page is for the form.
But the only thing is, any time I print anything else, an email or a picture or whatever, it's full size.
Well, this, have you printed other PDFs before? Is this the first PDF you've printed?
No, it's not the first.
And then there may be something in that document, but they're thinking it's full size, but they may not have sent it to you. But there should be in the printer, when you go to print it, look for something that says fit to page.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's like one of the properties
yes,
or whatever?
Right. Uh-huh. Look for something that says fit to page or something like that.
And also just make sure that it's not doing, that there's not something in it that's affecting your settings for your printing. And
see, it's like it's 13 pages. So, you know, before I knew what it was doing, it prints 13 pages that I can't read. So then we tried fixing different things and it still prints 13 pages.
When you open the email attachment and you're looking at it in Adobe Reader page and it looks fine before you try to print it?
That it was going to be full size.
There should be like a preview print how big it is.
Okay.
And usually on that page is where you get the settings for making the changes.
Okay. I'll check that out then. Thank you.
Glad to help. Now, the odds just strongly favor that there's not quite right and that if you think it'll work. But all right.
We are going to speak with Paul.
Hey. Okay, well, my question tonight, and then I said that, hey, you can make it all Spanish, but only that account. It didn't make the whole computer Spanish. Then, you know, previously I tried, you know, when Windows 7 was at its peak, like 3 years ago, I tried the Windows 7 reinstall on a laptop to make it Spanish too, and for a family member, and, you know, it worked fine. And I said, when I really make it another language, and it made my whole whole computer Spanish.
In touch with a guy from a week or two ago, Spanish, that didn't want it in Spanish.
In Windows 7, I'm looking, is in the region and language there is under account. Their system locale is what lets you language for the entire computer. And that's what you want to.
L-O-C-A-T-A-T-E.
Region and language in the control panel. One of the tabs is administrative. And one of the options on that page is change system locale.
Okay.
And when you do that, it will allow you to change where the entire system.
Okay, great. And the to unlock the I have an Android phone. To pay $25. I don't know if it's safe or not, but the question is for it.
Well, that the $25 thing is probably a service where you send in your provider and your works maybe a dozen. If you're the company you got the phone from, and if they'll do it, and then if they won't do it, then you start to look at other options.
Okay. Well, I went to the Samsung website, and then they refer me to this. Okay,
yeah,
thank you so much.
You should talk to your cell phone, not Samsung, but like if you're mobile or whoever.
Yeah, because your provider and the providers can unlock, and depending on who your provider is, some of them are more friendly than others about unlocking a phone. Some of them it's only after it's out of contract. Some of them, if it's you've paid off a year of it at least, planning on traveling internationally, and tell them that you have a different SIM card in it.
Good luck.
Okay, you too. Bye.
526-5738. We're coming minutes of the show, or 18 or 60 calls in the queue, so there's a real good chance, especially since we've been able to not answer and move on very well. Did you call the
that
vendor?
Depends.
No. So we keep trying. It's just fun.
Reboot it and call us back.
Install it on top of it.
Three times and then call us back.
All right, well, who's next in the queue?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Couple questions about SoundCloud. I am into Eastern European, Russian, Ukrainian pop, R&B, dance. Okay.
Let me tell you this. Go to di.fm. They just add a dance hits channel.
Or
di.fm stands for ported. They have
services.
30 channels of,
And
they electronic music had tend out. They don't want to be labeled. No, we're deep techno. No, we're like, we're dubstep. Hate bro step. That's a great, everybody's got. We're whatever channels that are based on music, but they just add Russian tracks.
I've got it.
That's sounds not
good.
That's
it's our troll on. They can get them on iTunes. Okay, but then I'm always wondering. I'm going back to some band to say 2007, okay, and some predate. So occasionally I'll go out there and say, okay, I probably shouldn't use a SoundCloud, downloader, okay, but it's like I can't find it anyplace.
No, I just, okay. It's kind of like another... my daughter was growing up. Okay, she got in Bully about 15 years ago, and I'd probably stream it. Bull's, you know, brain started flowing out. So I graduated from Jet Anime, Ukrainian to Russian, a couple really cool. And it's just that on eBay where, you know, it's like, oh, you know, a rare album, you know, $30 plus, you know, shipping from, you know, someplace in Kiev. Okay.
Yeah, there's, yeah, I was going to say, there's a Ukrainian website that sells a whole lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
If you get so, Skype International calling, I've heard that the hold music for Vladimir Putin is really cool.
There's actually a station, there's a website called 101.ru.
Vladimir Putin singing on Blueberry Hill with a jazz band that looked like it came from New Orleans.
Do you ever listen to 101.ru?
101.ru, no.
Okay, because that's got about 30, 40 channels. It's from it's from Russia. A lot of the channels are not Russian music. But,
okay.
But there is a Russian section. It's maybe about 8 to 12 channels.
Okay.
They have a Russian hip hop, Russian rap channel, which is actually usually what I listen to. But he has so much slang in it. It's pretty crazy. But some of it's pretty good. Some of it sounds pretty cheesy. But they also have some top 40 Russian. You can find like Russian radio stations that broadcast out of Moscow and St. Petersburg and some other cities as well online. But 101.ru has maybe 40 channels or something, some of which are all in Russian. And they have like classic, they have children's songs that are all in Russian, like from cartoons and stuff. They have some pretty cool stuff on there.
Yeah, because I've been signing on into the VK social network that's run out of St. Petersburg.
Yeah, Vkontakte.
It's kind of like that's one of the places where I can not only find Eastern European but Japanese and Korean artists.
Yeah, and it's kind of like Facebook without any of the like limits.
Yeah, without any of the ads, okay?
Not just ads, but you can put a lot more in your pictures on there.
Oh, yes. If you go to Nikita, okay, you will see some, And the nice thing about it is most websites don't recognize Russian social networks, so they don't block them. Okay, well, thank you. That's a couple, good things, because, you know, every once in a while I'll download from the SoundCloud, but I'd much rather, you know, find it and buy it from an artist.
Although, if you're looking for illegitimate downloads, the Russians have a whole lot of sites dedicated to that.
Yeah, I'd rather not do that.
Yeah, that's the .ru that you don't care if it's not blocked, you don't want
but
to
yeah, finding that stuff legitimately on CD tends to be fairly difficult.
Yeah. Okay, well, cool. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And it's fun listening to you guys.
Thanks.
You guys have a good year. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we can't help the guy with the 3G Wi-Fi access, but obscure Russian music, we're there.
On it.
Good job, Flicky.
Yeah, it just happened to be an area that I know something about.
And have studied, gone on scene. So you could have paid for your trip if you'd just loaded up your suitcase with Russian popular music.
You know,
CDs.
I was gonna go into some CD stores there. Now I heard it's a lot like a lot of areas in Asia where you never know if what you're buying is legitimate or not. However, a lot of the stuff there will have like these really complicated stamps on them if they're legitimate. I'm sure they can be counterfeited, but they put these stamps on things for their legitimate albums. And so I was gonna go into a CD store. But that was one of those where I never had the time that I felt like I could dedicate to go in and try to speak in like broken Russian to explain this is the kind of music I'm looking for. So I never did it.
And you tried practicing in front of the mirror, working up the songs that you wanted to try to get them to sell you the CD for?
Because I figured, you know, I was going to get like, you know, the Russian equivalent of, you know, Britney Spears and stuff, and that was not really what I wanted.
Or 27 different versions of Trololo.
A handful of years ago, I wanted to bring back like a big, you know, handful of CDs from Brazil. So I asked some friends down there, like, hey, where's a good place to go buy CDs? And they're like, why would you want to do that? No one buys music down there, yeah. I mean, if you want like something to put in your hand, you go out at night and you buy the dollar, you know, the bootleg CDs that they've got everything from, you know, 1970 on.
Yeah.
You know.
You just look through the catalog and they burn it.
They burn it right there. Yeah.
You ask about
they burn it while you
say,
wait.
Do you want their current album or their next album?
I didn't know there was a ninth Harry Potter book.
All right. Well, 713-526-5738 is the number. We've got one caller in the queue, so we could probably work in at least one more after that. And so let's see what our next call is.
All right. Up next, we're going to speak with Matthew.
Hey, Matthew, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Real good. What can we do for you tonight?
I'm a photographer. I have a computer with Windows 7 and one with Windows XP. Now, I've been taking pictures since 1955. I've got some pictures in my XP computer that I imported to the 7 computer because I like the way they handle pictures better. But when I load the picture up to edit it in Photoshop, I go through all the editing things and I try to save it. Windows 7 tells me I cannot save the picture because the picture is locked. Then I go back and go through the process that it explains to you what you're supposed to do. Unlock the picture and it doesn't work.
What is the process that's supposed to unlock the picture?
Are you supposed to go into and take claim? You know how X7 got all them things where you're supposed to take possession of the file and all that stuff. A lot of changes. I'm not at the computer right now, but I was just wondering if you guys had heard of anything like this before or if you have a cure for it.
Well, have you – I hate to say this after our go read the manual, but have you tried restarting the computer, shutting down the operating system?
Oh, yeah. Nothing. I have tried everything under the sun. I've tried everything that Microsoft suggests.
Have you tried making a copy of the picture and editing the copy instead of the original file?
I always do that anyway. I never edit an original file.
So the copy's locked also?
Yeah, everything's locked. And I take the same file and put it. I can edit all I want to in XP. It just does it in Windows 7.
Have you tried editing it in something other than Photoshop to see if maybe it's a problem just with Photoshop? Like, I don't know what else, but
actually, Photoshop is the only. It's the only picture editor that exists, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's unfortunate because if you believed in any other ones, you could try it in another one and see if it worked.
One of the things you might try doing is there are quite a few free photo editors that are web-based.
Okay.
You upload the image into them, you edit them, and then you download the changed copy. Try doing it with that.
Okay.
I think isn't one called Aviary? I think one is called Aviary. But there are quite a few of them out there. Just Google web-based image editor. And you'll find several of them, and upload it, make your change, and download it again. And it's possible that once you do that, just the process of doing that, saving it from another source, mm-hmm. may allow you then to edit.
Or if you can believe in another one long enough to test it, and then stop believing in it after you've tested it.
The other thing you might do is get some screenshot software, open it up, take a screenshot of it in Photoshop, mm-hmm. save that, and edit that.
Okay, I'll try all of the above. I'll talk to you next week and let you know what happened.
All right, let us know.
I was say, as long as the photo quality is pretty bad, because to get the whole picture on the screen is going to be pretty low resolution.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, if you're going to screen cap. That's odd. I guess it must be tied to...
We didn't ask anything about
Adobe Photoshop Bridge, which I think manages your photos more than just the. I just use Photoshop and use it the old-fashioned way, which is by itself, and I go open an individual file. I don't go through Bridge and organize them and all that kind of stuff. But it looks like Bridge is often a source of that, and scratch disk issues is another place where permissions with the scratch disk, where I guess it's.
So it can't actually write all the changes to apply them so to write it back out?
In the one that I saw, it looks like it couldn't open the file because it could not open a scratch file because the file is locked. and tells you to use the properties command to unlock the file. It sounded like he gets it open and can do stuff.
And he's going to Windows 7 to unlock it, but it may be a Photoshop issue.
And that although often it looks like these things say to go to properties in Windows Explorer to unlock the file. But
it sounded like he had done that. Like he had gone to try to unlock them from the OS perspective.
Yeah, I think it's probably a Photoshop issue. And if you just believe in something other than Photoshop.
Just temporarily.
Even just for a few moments, your life will be so much better.
Because even if you just open it and not the other one, and then save it to a different file name, is exactly the same file, then the new one might be unlocked.
That's right.
Wow, that sounds so secure. Like, you'd probably totally never be able to pirate images with that approach.
Probably the Librarian of Congress is against it.
Again it. He's again it. Well, you have spent a couple hours of your life listening to Technology Bites.
No refunds.
And like we say to all our callers, good luck.
Good luck.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Not getting cut off this hour. after this, depending on where you are, stay tuned for the quality programming that probably has answers to everyone's questions.
The ones we didn't
other
answer.
Than ours, maybe even answers to questions we didn't. But we'll be back with, I guess, sort of the more normal staff in another week. And
Pete will still want to leave this week.
Yes, I will sound like Stephen Hawking, but not as smart.
Answer Coalition, Act Now to Stop War and End Racism, organizes against war while fighting for social and economic justice at home, including the struggle against racism and all forms of discrimination and bigotry. For more details, you can check out AnswerCoalition.org. The Answer Coalition is active in the fight against war abroad and war at home. Cuts to schools, housing, social services, financial aid, and other needs of people often become money for drones, tanks, and military intervention. Answer is active in the fight for justice everywhere. Want to learn more? You can simply learn by visiting AnswerCoalition.org.
This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
It's week 3 of KPFT's online membership campaign. I'm General Manager Dwayne Bradley with an update. Old friends from Spring, The Woodlands, Sugar Land, Katy, Clear Lake, La Porte, and Clear Lake Shores have all contributed during our March web drive. And new friends from Houston have also stepped up. We all hear how the ways people support things that matter to them is changing, from pledge drives and mailouts to the internet. It's revolutionizing giving. A sustaining membership means those who give just a few dollars a month help reduce fund drives and help KPFT all year long. New members also show granting organizations that the community cares about us. Visit KPFT.org. Thanks for supporting your community radio station, KPFT Houston.